ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
It's been coined the world's most ambitious solar project, a plan to deliver electricity from the Northern Territory to Singapore via thousands of kilometres of underwater transmission line. Backed by one of Australia's richest men, Sun Cable has made a vital step towards becoming reality with a multi-million dollar agreement with traditional owners signed outside of Darwin.
This region has one of the highest levels of solar irradiance on the planet. This is a remarkable resource. We are in the middle of an energy transition where we are seeing decarbonisation of energy systems across the world. We are seeing at the same time an increase in energy demand. It is tremendously important that resources such as the one here in the Barkly is able to come to market to generate clean electricity that can be used to power the future.
For many older Australians living in the bush, not being able to drive can severely hamper your lifestyle. Today, we take you to regional Queensland, where the community has come up with a neat solution for their elderly folk.
Oh, I've been using a taxi a bit lately because it's been a bit more convenient for where I wanted to go. Now I'm back to using the transport again because I miss, you know, seeing the drivers and everything.
I'm Sinead Mangan and this is Australia Wide, coming to you from Whadjuk Country, Perth. But first to Darwin in the Northern Territory, where the world's most ambitious solar project is one step closer to becoming reality. The company behind the project, Sun Cable, plans to generate enormous amounts of power from solar panels in the Northern Territory and then ultimately pipe that power via more than 4,000 kilometres of underwater transmission in Indonesian waters to feed the power-hungry markets of Southeast Asia. Now, if the project gets off the ground, it will be the world's first intercontinental power grid. But an ambitious plan like this requires money, and it requires a lot of it. The Sun Cable project has the backing of one of Australia's richest men, tech entrepreneur Mike Cannon-Brookes. And there have been many questions about whether this project was simply a pipe dream. However, it's now one step closer to reality, reaching an agreement with the traditional owners and the Northern Land Council to access land.
This is a very historic moment. It is a very important Indigenous land use agreement. We from Sun Cable are very, very proud of the work that has been done in our team, but also the work that's been done through Matthew's team in the NLC and also with the native title holders. It's wonderful to see the celebration here today.
Sun Cable's Chief Executive Ryan Williamson-Bell. Our reporter Matt Garrick was there for the signing of the agreement. Now, Matt, I think many people thought Sun Cable's plan was kind of dead in the water because of the difficulty of raising the many billions of dollars that are required to get it off the ground. Is this agreement a new chapter for the project?
Sinead, hello. So look, I think you're not alone there. I think many people over the many years that this project have been floated have thought, how can this possibly be brought to life? It is such an extreme and challenging vision. But what we have seen here is Sun Cable putting in this assiduous effort to consult with traditional owners across this very vast area, this part of the Northern Territory, to look towards building their station, their solar farm at Powell Creek Station, north of the town of Elliot. So basically, according to Sun Cable, according to the Northern Land Council, and backed by the traditional owners of the region, it does, yes, open a new chapter for Sun Cable to essentially proceed. In the wake of this agreement being signed, we've heard Sun Cable essentially say, we plan and it is our ambition to get power generated by the end of this decade. So certainly it's far from dead in the water and they're going at it. At least they've got the agreement now over the line with traditional owners and they're paving ahead.
Matt, tell us about the Indigenous Land Use Agreement itself. What does it involve?
Well, the agreement itself was signed between a few, between the key landowner groups of this region, the Northern Land Council, Sun Cable, and the Northern Territory Government. While in some ways it's scant on exactly what it's going to mean for specific jobs, specific training, what we are hearing is that it will involve those things. They're saying it's a multi-million dollar agreement. that will bring multi-generational wealth to traditional owners who have native title over the land earmarked for Powell Creek Station. They're saying it will also have protections in there for cultural knowledge in the area, for environmental sustainability. This has been no easy feat to pull this together. It's taken 3 years, and with about 200 different traditional owners in more than 70 consultations. So Sun Cable's obviously gone full in on this consultation period to make this agreement something that traditional owners would sign off on. So while, as I say, there's no exact dotted line on what the jobs and training will be, they're saying it will bring economic empowerment to this very vast Barkly region that for a very long period of time has been left without a major industry.
Matt, like you said, the solar farm itself is earmarked for north of the town of Elliot. What do you think the project will mean for that town itself? Or is there any kind of information on that yet?
Yes, and look, I should just also clarify, Elliot is actually 750 kilometres south of Darwin. It's very remote, extraordinarily distant from anywhere, about halfway between Darwin and Alice Springs. And as I mentioned around that, the region, it has been in many ways languishing over recent years. Its pub has closed down, its library has closed down, its second of two service stations has closed down. There's very few jobs and economic developments there. Sun Cable offers a chance for Elliot to be somewhat redeveloped into a hub for this project if it goes ahead to the scale that it's Sun Cable is pledging it will.
Let's hear from Matthew Ryan from the Northern Land Council, who had a bit to say about that.
I think it's a great opportunity, to be honest. I shouldn't be optimistic. I think it's great to see that that traditional owners will be prospering from this agreement, this 70-year agreement. I think we should be grateful that, you know, we are working closely with Sun Cable and the negotiations done by the Northern Land Council. I think it's a great opportunity. It provides jobs, training and any other opportunities. I think Elliot could be the hub for all, not just Indigenous people, but a lot of people around Elliot, other people that can come in and set up business opportunity.
That's Matthew Ryan from the Northern Land Council. Now, Matt, there's been an awful lot of hype around this project, and probably because it has involved a number of Australia's richest people. Mike Cannon-Brookes is involved with it still. But can you explain what exactly it is that Sun Cable is planning to do? What's the big dream?
The big dream is really to tap in, Sinead, to these new energy markets that they can foresee in the future by harnessing the energy of the outback sun. On a practical level, what that means is they want to build Australia's largest solar farm out there south of Elliot, around 12,000 hectares on Powell Creek Station. They also have voiced their ambition to create a second solar farm out there as well on Muckaty Station. They want to see this energy used to power parts of the Northern Territory. They flagged it could be used for parts of the Barkly and eventually Darwin. Their big picture idea is to get it across to Southeast Asia, to power Singapore, to power other parts of Southeast Asia. That would involve the creation and installation of a huge subsea cable, the kind that's really never been done in a modern era or to such an extent for power generation. So that's basically the big vision of this project.
Now, Sun Cable has been on the card since 2018, and there's an awful lot written about it in the business pages, and it's mainly around the financial hurdles of raising these large sums of money. I mean, it's billions of dollars, up to 30-odd billion dollars that it will require. So we know a bit about that, but what about the technical challenges of, as you said, this huge pipeline that has to be built?
Oh, well, look, for starters, Sinead, I guess you got the Northern Territory outback to contend with.
True,
which
yep.
is completely remote. It's completely without resources. Everything has to be trucked in, including workers, including supplies. To start this project from ground one, you're dealing with one of the most remote parts of Australia. Then, as you say, it goes into this next chapter, which is getting up the highway all the way to Darwin and then running this cable through to Singapore. It almost seems like an insurmountable financial challenge for a company like Sun Cable. But, you know, they're obviously still at the table and still talking a big game. You could see yesterday we spoke to Ryan Williamson-Bell about this, and they're still, you know, proudly saying that this could be generating energy to Southeast Asia within the next decade. I talked to an energy researcher as well earlier today who suggested that may be an uphill challenge to get there. But at this point in time, nobody from Sun Cable is saying we can't do this. So it's an interesting time for this project.
Matt Garrick in Darwin, thanks for bringing this story to Australia Wide.
Thanks, Sinead.
ABC Australia Wide.
With the Northern Territory prison population sitting at a record high, a group of Aboriginal men on Groote Island are breaking ground as the first participants in a new on-country residential rehab program. The Anandilal Yakwa Healing Centre opened earlier this year as part of the former government's local decision-making agreement with the Groote community. But while the centre has drawn praise from elders, locals and participants, attracting interest from across the territory, there are fears current government will make the centre's success difficult to recreate elsewhere. Joseph Hathaway-Wilson has this story.
In the shallows of the Gulf of Carpentaria, a group of Anandilal Yakwa men are wading through crystal clear water, fishing spears in hand.
It's just the thing that we grew up with, you know, like we all did. Ever since we were young, we started to grab spears, walk with our, you know, uncles, grandfathers, dads.
Not long ago, they were at risk of doing time in a Darwin prison. Now, Wayne and his peers are among the first to undertake a six-month residential rehabilitation program on Groote Island.
We're in a rehab called DASA. They're based in Alice Springs, but they came up here, so we're the first film crew to come over here.
Opening earlier this year, the Anandilal Yakwa Healing Centre is a 32-bed facility run by Drug and Alcohol Services Australia, or DASA. At the moment, it's the territory's only alternative to custody centre for men, and for local elders like Matthew McKenzie, it's been more than 10 years in the making.
I've seen it from day one till today, so I'm really happy with it. We wanted this because I wanted my people to do their time here and better than doing the time in Darwin prison.
Fellow elder Elaine Mamarica has seen generations of Anandilal Yakwa men caught in cycles of offending and incarceration.
I know some of the inmates I've been talking to. When we ask them, why do you go to jail every day? Sometimes they tell us they stay home in prison.
She says the location of the healing centre makes all the difference.
They're just close to community and people, and they talk what they think or what their problems are. They just spit it out.
Eight of us, eight stationary. So one of there, two, three.
On any given day, residents will partake in physical health activities, therapy, skills and employment sessions, all while learning about their culture on country, much of which is facilitated by elders and organisations in the local community. Service manager Solosi Tupo says diverting people away from urban centres is key to the program's success.
They're thinking about staying, which is one of the main purposes of this place, is getting the younger men to focus on the community, to come and better the community for themselves, instead of a lot of them are taking off to Darwin, hanging out in Darwin a lot, getting into a bit of trouble, and then staying in prison in Darwin.
Yeah, that's a good one right there. That's a bad say right there. That's a bad say right there. Two more. Give it two more. Give me two more. Come on. Yeah.
The centre has opened at a time when the Northern Territory's correction system has been under immense pressure. Since the Country Liberal Party were elected on a tough-on-crime platform in August last year, the Northern Territory prison population has grown by more than 600 people, a greater increase than occurred over the 4 years prior or over the 5 years of the federal intervention. ABS data indicates 88% of prisoners are Indigenous. With tales of overcrowding, staff shortages and regular lockdowns emerging from the prison system, there are now calls from stakeholders like DASA CEO Eloise Cole to expand initiatives like the Healing Centre to other parts of the territory.
When you've got prison numbers as high as they are, it's incredibly hard for even the best of intentioned prison staff to be able to provide rehabilitation and therapeutic supports to people. We can help the system, we can ease the burden on the system by having those men come here.
Other communities have expressed interest in setting up similar initiatives. It could be easier said than done, however, with the NT government this year announcing it would phase out local decision-making agreements with Aboriginal communities. the policy which saw the healing centre established on Groote Eylandt in the first place. For those with reservations about the program, Miss Cole insists life at the centre is far from being a get-out-of-jail-free card.
They're required to cook, clean, maintain the grounds. They contribute to the community, they do work in the community, and they work off their fines and orders while they're there. So it's actually harder in some respects. It's certainly not getting people off easy.
On the shores of Groote Eylandt, Wayne and other residents are enjoying their downtime, dissecting a stingray they just caught.
As you can see, my cousin brother, he's gutting out the stingray. So he's just looking at the kidney, if it's eatable or not.
With the once raw and real prospect of prison now literally hundreds of miles away, Wayne wants to see more men given the chance to heal on country.
I feel all right, you know, because I'm originally down from Darwin, you know. So I'm glad that I came back here. We just wanted to show what are we doing out here, you know, just to encourage more men like us.
Joseph Hathaway-Wilson reporting there from Groote Eylandt. You're listening to Australia Wide with me, Sinead Mangan. Lovely to have your company today. Remember, you can podcast the show or listen back to the program through the ABC Listen app or by visiting the Australia Wide website. Just search for ABC and Australia Wide. And you can always email us and tell us what's happening in your neck of the woods, australiawide.radio@abc.net.au. Retirement was supposed to be the best time of his life, but 80-year-old George Davis spends each day travelling 100 kilometres to sit by his wife in hospital. Ms Davis is not sick, but one of 1,000 of people in Queensland who are in a hospital bed, waiting for a more permanent care solution. As Joanna Marie reports, elderly people and dementia sufferers are amongst those stranded in hospital beds.
We've had our ups and downs, you know, a cuddle and that, and you make up. No, we've always worked things out, but we've had a good marriage. What did you do?
Yeah, well, that is right. What did I do?
Yeah.
Oh, everything come together.
George Davis's wife, Nellie, is staying in the Bundaberg Base Hospital, in a ward surrounded by people just like her with dementia. They're all waiting for beds to come available in residential aged care homes.
They're all full. Apparently I heard that some of the nursing homes have closed their books. They just won't take any more names. You know, they're absolutely full.
Queensland Health Minister Tim Nicholls says it's a problem right across the state.
We've got a very large number of patients who need care but don't need to be in our hospitals. And at any one time, across the Queensland health system, that's about 1,000 people. Around 837 of those currently are older folk and about 250 are younger folk. The older folk are predominantly waiting for aged care homes that aren't available to them. And the younger folk are waiting for an NDIS package and have been waiting too long. You know, obviously this is a pretty dreadful circumstance. Older people who need care but don't need to be in a hospital shouldn't be in a hospital ward with all of the challenges that that entails. It's not a good environment for them to be in. They need to be in aged care accommodation. Look, this is having a very significant impact on the hospital system. The cost of those stranded patients in Queensland, those long-stay older patients in Queensland, is around about $1.91 million a day. And for the young people, it's around $660,000 a day. So that's money that is not being diverted into emergency departments or other surgeries that could be spent very much more wisely on delivering services.
Andrew Ainscoe is the General Services Manager of Forest View Aged Care in Childers. He wants more beds and a review into the funding system that determines an individual's care needs and subsidies.
Just in Childers, there are currently 397 people waiting on our wait list. As a registered nurse and trying to coordinate care, I'm in my 28 years of nursing, this is the hardest I've ever seen it. I feel I'm stressed every day now, trying to give care for a community, trying to find care. I could give you 100 examples of what I'm seeing out there on a daily basis. We don't have enough beds. We need aged care funding right here to enable us to grow. We want to grow. We have we've been very successful in getting other grants, which has been successful, but not enough to allow us to grow beds. We have them to be able to grow the staffing models. We're successfully right now growing staffing. We're ready to go, but I can't grow because I can't add beds to the community.
Federal Health Minister Mark Butler is aware of the situation, and it's an issue Minister Nicholls says will be back on the agenda at the National Health Ministers meeting in Brisbane next month. As for George Davis, he just wants a safe place for his wife.
I think it's about time the government wake up themselves and got in and done things and done the right thing for people.
80-year-old George Davis speaking to Joanna Marie.
All around the country, you're on ABC Australia Wide.
Like, say the swimming carnival, I can tell them about how, like, the races are. And as well, there's a big carnival, like, where we show our house colours.
You've never done that before?
No, not really, no.
Let's head to Victoria now, where farmers have blocked staff from a Victorian government agency from accessing their land. Employees of VicGrid were trying to access the farming properties to do environmental survey work ahead of putting down new electrical transmission lines. They were stopped by 50 farmers. In recent weeks, VicGrid wrote to property owners informing it would use powers under the Electricity Industry Act to gain entry if consent was not given. It was the government's agency's first attempt to use compulsory access powers. Angus Verley was there for the protest.
Access denied! 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 Access denied!
That was the sound greeting two VicGrid employees when they arrived at a farm east of Witchyproof in an attempt to force access. There were similar scenes on a property at Greens Creek, near Stawell. Those employees were there to do environmental surveys for the deeply controversial VNI West transmission line project. But those surveys didn't go ahead. The group of farmers stood behind a locked gate in front of a wall of hay bales and made their views clear. Among them was farm owner Greg Roberts, who read a short statement to VicGrid staff.
I do not consent to this land today.
Okay.
Would you like me to repeat it?
I think I've got that loud and clear, yeah. Okay, thank you.
He says the message has been sent loud and clear.
Well, today we had information from TCV, which is now VicGrid, that they were coming to compulsorily access our land for survey purposes. We'd had the paperwork coming in recent weeks, and we received our 48-hour notice to say that they were coming. We don't want this project, and we think that the urgent need for the environmental work lacks credibility. It's a desperate act because they've got time constraints. What next step is after the day, we don't know, but I'm really very, very grateful for everyone that came. And there'll be another day, I assume, in the future, and we'll have to deal with that at the time. And there was no need for the police to intervene, because all of the wonderful country and town people, and some people travel a long distance, they all came here to be peaceful. I'm absolutely clear that they got the message because it was very concise.
And where to from here?
Well, only time will tell, Angus. I dare say they'll try again. Whether it is at this access gateway, time will only tell. But I think we've made it perfectly clear that they're not welcome.
And at the end of the day, Greg, what actually happens? Because they bought these powers, so they've got these legal rights to get onto your land. So what happens at the end of the day?
Well, we've been told that they've got the right to start issuing fines, and if you disobey an access order, then there is a process where they can hand you a summons and take you to court. Now, that's all the threatening things that have been waved over our head, and we'll just have to see how things pan out.
I think we're going to get arrested, go to jail?
Well, it's quite possible. If they keep crushing rural people and keep harassing them with these claims for urgent and access to our farms, then people will not accept it. Time will tell, that's all I can say.
Under strengthened compulsory access powers recently enacted in Spring Street, VicGrid could seek court orders to gain access to private property. Those court orders would permit the use of reasonable force. VicGrid did not say what its next steps would be, But in a statement, Chief Executive Alistair Parker reiterated the preference for voluntary access agreements. But with the expected completion date for VNI West already pushed back 2 years to the end of 2030, it seems likely many more events like what happened yesterday are still to come.
Horsham reporter Angus Farley with that story. We hear about the importance of staying active in our later years, but staying mobile, especially in regional areas with limited public transport, is an issue unto itself. With more older Australians living at home and recent changes brought in by the federal government's home care packages, some residents, like those in Mackay, are discovering it's not just their basic care needs they have to worry about. Liam O'Connell has more.
On a typical week, Meishian might use the local community bus five times or just a couple. But it's comforting knowing it's there.
I'm reliant on the services. If I don't have the services, I can't go out.
The Mackay Community Visitors Association was set up in the early 90s as a volunteer service, initially working in aged care homes, but later expanding to older people living at home and those with a disability. But with limited public accessible transport in the regional town, the need for a bus became more and more apparent. Mei Sheehan says her only alternative to the bus, which she does pay for, is taxis, which are far more expensive.
I've been using a taxi a bit lately because it's been a bit more convenient for where I wanted to go. Now I'm back to using the transport again because I miss, you know, seeing the drivers and everything.
The services coordinator, Tracy Gagans, says that slower-paced, more sociable style is deliberate. She says more than half of her clients had no family or friends to support them at all.
I've got one that she's got a distant niece that lives in England. She's listed the ambulance as her next of kin. That's just heartbreaking for me when you go and meet someone and they go, look, I've just got nobody.
This month, the federal government switched off its long-standing home care packages in favour of a new supported home method. Under the new system, all the costs of care will be streamlined into one set budget with limits on each component of the cost, like labour, administrating the package and travel. Those set limits are expected to come into effect from mid-next year, and while they haven't been decided yet, advocates have warned if the budgets are substantially capped, it'll force difficult choices for recipients about what they eat, what care they need, and where they go.
Did you want to chat out here?
For now, at least, demand for the community bus in Mackay is through the roof. Ms Gagan says while she understands the thinking behind having more people cared for at home, she's struggling to keep up with demand.
Transport has averaged since Easter probably four new referrals a day, which is really, really horrific when you think about it's still the number of people that are still driving that won't be in the next probably 6 to 12 months.
Numbers from the Federal Treasury show nationwide the number of people aged 65 is expected to double by the 2070s. CEO of National Seniors Australia, Chris Grice, says while a renewed focus on caring for people at home will take some pressure off residential aged care services, a more fundamental rethink of how and where Australians age is needed.
A lot of people have in their mind their definition of what aged care is about. From our perspective, importantly, it is about clinical care. It is about nursing. It's about allied health. It's making sure that those most basic of needs are looked after.
He says while he understands having that social connection is key to a person's overall well-being, running a subsidy through the aged care system does make it more expensive than it should be.
A lot of people think of aged care as, well, who's going to pay for my light and easy meals, or who's going to cut my grass? You've done that all of your life. Why does that change when you get much older? And this is a mindset we need to sort of get people to think more about. Aged care is about that health aspect and less about those other services.
Tracy Gagan says her bus drivers have had to start declining what the department labels low priority patients as demand for them continues to escalate. She's worried as those fixed costs of doing business like petrol and wages rise, she'll have to make tougher decisions.
They've got no idea that the cost to provide service is a lot dearer than what it is in the main street of Canberra. And I think that's something that's always been an issue, that aged care is not one size fits all because every area has their own unique issues.
Mei Sheehan says that service the community buses provide is unique and special.
The one that I've got for the social drive, what they call the social drive, she takes me for the groceries and then we have a coffee and that afterwards.
Liam O'Connell with that story, with reporting from Christy Lee McQueen. And that is Australia Wide for this Tuesday. I'm Sinead Mankin. It's been lovely to have your company. Cheerio.
Listen.